7:40 on the dot here, and it is time for a, well, what we might call legislative update, but we're going to change things up just a little bit. We got an interesting topic here this morning, and joining us normally would be Virgil Peck, but because of schedules and that sort of thing, we switched it around, and we're joined by Representative Dr. Ron Bryce. How you doing, sir?
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Yeah, good to have you here in studio. So we've got a bit of an interesting topic here that I think the listeners will really find interesting, and this is kind of on the topic of mental health.
Right. I think it is very interesting, and it's one of those things that we tend to push under the rug sometimes. We don't talk about a lot, but the truth is about one out of every four or one out of every five adults at some point in their life are going to have a mental health crisis. And so we need to really look at it and address it. And I think this is a legislative type of interview, type of show. But if I could, I'll just tell a little bit about my paying job, so to speak.
So, you know, in a little bit of background, the reason that I kind of brought this topic actually to your attention, there was a Wall Street Journal article about the thought about bringing back asylums. And I know that's a bit of a taboo word here, but the thought of, you know, a mental health facility where, you know, it used to be back in the day, we had these the locations where people could go to receive this mental health treatment, some of them short-term, some of them long-term. We still have some of those facilities here, but they're much less used than when they once were. So, and you've got a little bit of experience with this, you know, from that healthcare side of things, which I think is really interesting. There's kind of a nexus between that and what we can do legislatively.
Right. In my so-called paying job, my day job, I'm a medical doctor, and I've been involved in family medicine and emergency medicine. And it goes back all the way to when I was growing up in Coffeyville, working in the emergency room here, the night shift. I was fascinated by mental health issues. And I think I can tell you exactly, almost to the day and the hour, when I really decided it was something that I wanted to focus in on. I was in college. I was a pre-med student. I was studying, had a big term paper, and I had stayed up all night. I'd been up maybe 36 hours, and this was before computers and printers, so typing a big paper. And I remember it was Friday late afternoon. I turned in that paper, and I was walking back out of the library, and I was so relieved my work for that week was coming to a close. But the corner of my eye caught a book on a shelf in the library. And I don't know why, but I picked it up. It was a book by a psychiatrist, Viktor Frankl, who's an Austrian psychiatrist. And it's called Man's Search for Meaning. And even though I was dead tired, I'd been up 36 hours. I was looking forward to just going, get something to eat, going to bed. I sat down, I read that entire book because it was so fascinating to me, his perspective as a psychiatrist going through the Holocaust and losing his wife in the concentration camps and how he survived mentally, and his story of the guards and the other prisoners through the Nazi concentration camps. And he came up with a type of psychotherapy called logotherapy. And one thing led to another in my life, and I was a biology chemistry major at the time, and I decided to change to psychology major with biology chemistry minors because I figured if I didn't make it into medical school, I'd go into psychology. But it was just so fascinating to me. But anyway, I went ahead and got into medical schools, into residency. And the scope of the mental health problem was astounding to me. I was working in a level one trauma center, which is a large facility. The number of mental health patients that we saw day in, night out was astounding. And so I was doing my best to treat and minister to these people. So a group of us would take our little black bags at night, go under the bridges, go to the homeless encampments, try to treat these people. A lot of them had substance abuse problems. We started a rehab program for drug and alcohol. And the problem in the medical facilities that I saw, especially the large level one trauma center type facilities, was we would treat people for a gunshot wound or a stab wound, and we would they would be fine. We'd send them out the door. But then we didn't treat the underlying problems. They would come back the next week, and they'd be stabbed again or shot again for the same kind of behavior that they, you know, had been involved with before. Not to say everyone with mental illness is violent or anything, but we saw these repeat, the slang term is repeat offenders, but these repeat customers in the emergency departments. And so I was young and had some vision, so ended up starting a holistic clinic just a block or two down the street from the level one trauma center. I was actually the medical director at the trauma center, but I had an outside clinic that I started because these people needed counseling. They needed, a lot of them needed clothing assistance, food assistance. They had problems other than just the immediate, you know, as I said, gunshot wound or stab wound. And so ended up starting a 501c3. This was in Shreveport, Louisiana. I was working at LSU Medical Center. And we got over 50 churches and pastors to donate their time and resources for people that were leaving the emergency room, had follow-up for their medical care, but also had counseling, substance abuse help. They would have prayer for the people who wanted prayer, spiritual counseling. And so that's just to say, in my mindset, approaching people from a mental health perspective is something that has been dear to my heart for years. And what we see today is very disheartening. And as you said, there's almost a provocative article in the Wall Street Journal about maybe we need to open up more asylums, more mental institutions. And this all goes back, James, to, I think, the 70s and 80s. I'm old enough to have seen a lot of things change over my life. But in the 70s and 80s, there was a shift. There used to be a lot of people, as you said, in the mental hospitals, the asylums, as we call them. But well-meaning people tried their best to help these patients by incorporating them into society more instead of isolating them in these mental hospitals. And so there was a big move. I think there was at one point something like 600,000 people in mental institutions back in the day.
Well, and you got to see some of that firsthand, right?
Oh, yeah. I kind of joke around that I spent 2 weeks in a mental hospital, but it was actually as a medical student. I actually lived among the psychiatric patients in the mental hospital. We had a, you know, private bedroom, but would play you know, ping pong and games with them during the day, the people who were schizophrenic and depressed and hallucinating. But it was the most fascinating thing to actually befriend people who had these issues and see almost firsthand what they're going through and the struggles that they go through. And I know mental hospitals, if you've seen, there's a movie, a lot of movies, there's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, you know, Jack Nicholson, that's probably an iconic movie, kind of showed some shade or a bad light on some of the mental institutions and psychiatric hospitals. But they did provide safety for a lot of these people. And I think today, James, you know, you see in the newspaper, there's the, is it Jordan Neely? He's the New York subway guy who had a long history of mental illness, violent behavior, multiple arrests, and he was subdued by, I believe it was a Marine, and Neely ended up dying or choking. And so there's a big, I don't want to prejudge that, there's a big jury trial coming up, I know, or some sort of court decision. But a lot of these people, for their own safety, this is not just everyday people with some depression or a little anxiety or anything, but some people do need an institution, or they need help, and they actually, you know, separating them from society is not always entirely bad. I don't want to be sound like I'm mean or hard-hearted, but there is somewhat of a silver lining on the old mental hospitals and asylums. And see, when they, in the 70s and 80s, James, when they started turning people away from the inpatient hospitals, the natural progression of that was we have a homeless problem. And so if we look today and we throw up our hands in despair and say we have a growing homeless problem, we have a growing drug addiction problem, all these other issues, a lot of that, maybe, you know, different studies say different things, but maybe a third of that is directly related to turning people away from inpatient psychiatric care.
Well, and the article was saying that the hope was going to be that, okay, instead of having this more centralized approach, we're going to have some of these community health clinics that are going to be built. They estimated they were going to build all these clinics, and then that would be a place to care for the people that would normally go to these larger institutions, but that didn't really work out.
Right. I think it was John F. Kennedy signed, I forget the name of the bill, around 1963. It was supposed to build 1,500 outpatient community mental health centers. That never materialized. And I think it's, you know, it's politics. I'm sure it's taxpayer money, and we need to be frugal with that at times. But it just never materialized. So these people were just turned out on the street, literally on the street. Seen many of them. My heart goes out to them. I actually have gone with my little black bag, my doctor's bag, under the bridges into the inner city, trying to help these people, trying to find a way. But society and the political process and has just not panned out to have these community centers. Some of the pushback has been, you know, we don't want a mental health facility next to our grade school. We don't want a mental health facility next to our house or our church or our, you know, our place of business. But really, these people are in desperate need. And so we need to really rethink that. We need to rethink the need for psychiatric hospitals.
So in Kansas, of course, does have Osawatomie State Hospital, but I don't know what the patient population is there. You know, what is the process? You know, is that right now being kind of viewed as a last resort? And I know that they've had some staffing problems in addition, trying just to get people to work there.
You know, I'll just repeat something that was said by one of the Wichita City Commissioners, and he said the largest psychiatric institution is the jail, because Osawatomie or Larner Hospital, and there's a new one being built in Wichita, about 50 beds, they're just a drop in the bucket for what is needed. These people, like the Jordan Neely case, as we said before, they end up in jail. That's the least safe place for them. That's the least therapeutic place for them. It's the least safe place for those around them. But that's what they end up doing. And I work in emergency departments, and we house, we're overwhelmed with psychotic patients, suicidal patients, patients with crises, mental health crises, and we have to house these people in conditions that are not therapeutic for them. It's not necessarily safe for them. There's just no other place to go. If they've committed a crime, they end up in jail. And we can perhaps have the police or the sheriff's department take them to jail. But many, many of these patients are housed for days and days and weeks in an emergency room, in a hallway. I've seen them actually attacking other patients. And it's just not a good situation. We need to really rethink what we're doing with outpatient mental health care.
Well, and I think that there have been, you know, movies and TV shows over the years that have depicted these quote-unquote asylums as horrible places with, you know, almost torture. But you look at how, for instance, Osawatomie was constructed. It is built away from a population. It was built to be in a pretty, you know, pastoral setting with gardens that unfortunately have fallen into disrepair. I know there was some efforts years ago to try to clean them up a little bit. But you think about it, this is a place to go basically away from society and try and do some repair with that, you know, mental health and mental processes to hopefully for some be able to integrate back into society. But it's a kind of a place that was set aside to go for
right.
a period of time.
Right. Even the word asylum, even though it has bad connotations now, sometimes with the, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest movie and different cultural things, but it was meant to be a set aside, serene place where people could be isolated from negative influences and receive therapy. And the whole thing, James, I don't know if, I guess you probably realize this, but the whole push for outpatient care really came about in the late 50s, early 60s, when, with the invention of a medication named Thorazine. And it's a phenothiazine type of medication that people had high hopes that if a lot of these schizophrenic patients and others would be on this medication Thorazine, they would be tranquil, their hallucinations would cease, and they would be able to be incorporated into society through these outpatient care centers. But like a lot of things in medical history, there's always a negative effect, and Thorazine has some horrendous side effects, and it didn't pan out to be the panacea that was hoped for. But you know, I've seen electroconvulsive therapy, electric shock therapy. They don't do lobotomies anymore, but there are horror stories of people who've gone through lobotomies and different things like that, just trying to have therapies for these people. But the hope with Thorazine was it could make inpatient psychiatric care into outpatient care with Thorazine, and it'd be a cost savings financially for society. One story that fascinated me in medical school was the way lobotomies became discovered. There was a guy that worked on the railroad back in the 1800s, and he was a explosives expert. And there was an explosion that shot this metal bar, huge like a javelin, inch thick bar, through his skull. And they thought he would die, but he didn't die. They pulled it out. He lost his eye, but the front part of his brain was destroyed. But after this, and after he recovered, they noticed that he used to be aggressive and profane and attack people, and he was just an all-around bad guy. And now he became a tranquil, more peaceable fella. And so one thing led to another. And so the lobotomy, this guy's name was Phineas Gage, and he survived. He was sort of the first unintended lobotomy. And so some of the physicians, neurologists in Harvard and different places developed the lobotomy.
Oh, that's fascinating. Well, I know we're always running out of time here, speaking right. with Dr. Ron Bryce here, but in the last couple of minutes we have together, I want to think about, you know, where should the conversation go from here? What do you think that we should continue to talk about, continue to explore kind of on this topic of mental health and asylums, you know, and maybe at the legislative level, what do you think should be the next step of the conversation?
Well, I think last legislative session there was, as far as I know, very little, if any, discussion of mental health. And I'm on the Health and Human Services Committee, and we didn't see much there. And there may have been some discussions in other committees I don't know about, but nothing reached the House floor. I think we definitely need to take a look again at the best effective treatment of people. We have to have public health and public safety concerns involved. And we need to be willing to look at something that we want to sweep under the rug, you know. And a lot of times we just don't want to face the fact that so many people do suffer from mental illness, and some major mental illness. So it's something that is on the discussion level right now. I think the new hospital in Wichita is going to be a plus, but we'll just have to see how that pans out.
Well, it's a really interesting topic, and I appreciate you sharing, you know, your perspective on it, sir. Anything else in the last minute that we have that you'd like to let us know about?
Oh, I just want to say once again, I've said this before, but I'm a first-year legislator in the state government, and it's been a pleasure. It's been a joy to represent the people of Montgomery County in the 11th District. I hope my experiences as a physician, as a business owner, and as a legislator can all come together and do positive things for people. That's what I want to do.
All right, Representative Ron Bryce here on the Mighty 690. Appreciate you stopping by, and we'll be back with more right after this.